Go. All of these links out here for timing in the elegant track of Fox, and your communications networks are the biggest units of the timing information. Roads and highways for knowing where to put down the asphalt. Space applications, aviation, so the airplanes can make GPS approaches. Agriculture. John Deere, believe it or not, is one of the biggest movers in using GPS in farming equipment so that they can plant seed and know where to harvest it using automation, basically automated harvesting and stuff. Marine Force, your ship. Now, the ships will take their GPS output, plug it into a radio called AIS, which is automatic identification system, and then transmit it on one of the marine frequencies so that the Coast Guard, using vessel tracking service, can keep track of all the ships in the harbor. And I should have had a link set up. Let's see if it'll bring us to one of the DTS sites. Bringing to the bottom of these goes to the Coast Guard Navigation Center. So all these links that you have available give you all this information. Let's see, services and reporting. Let's see if we can find the GPS here. You can see on this graphic that, for example, here the vessel coming into port through a channel cannot be seen on radar because of the ground in between, but AIS is transmitting this information by a VHF radio. That gets picked up, and Coast Guard knows where the ship is. So, all of these various methods of keeping track of things is wonderful stuff. Rail, Amtrak's trying to keep track of its trains. It's not just Amtrak. It's your freight railroads keeping track of boxcars and things. Again, in the marine environment, you've got your cargo containers. Some of them with the valuable cargoes that they don't keep track of, some of them just being expensive, others being explosive. And they want to know where that is at all times. They want to make sure it does not get into the wrong hands. So they'll keep track of it using a GPS receiver that will then occasionally transmit its location once it's received the GPS information. That I'll talk about later. The National Geodetic Survey is where you can find various maps and things, emergency response imagery. There's all sorts of ways that they're using these space satellites and stuff to keep track of where things are supposed to be located, the logistics of things. I'm a ham radio operator, among other things. And let's see, let's go to findyou.com/N4FCY, my call sign to where I am today. Mac.findyou.com/N4FCY. How did I put myself here today? Nope, I'm still at home in Castleberry, Florida. Let's see. Nine shows you where I am now, which seems to be in Manhattan somewhere. So let's zip in, and if we do, we'll find that I am on 31st Street and 7th Avenue. And this is because I have sent my information into the database. And, you know, there's Madison Square Garden, Penn Station, and here's the hotel. I made a little car icon for the mobile ham radio station. but I can also send in via internet, which I've done in this case. But the ham radio operators, for the most part, let's see, nearby APRS activity. APRS is the automatic packet recording system. Interesting scheme. Bob Berlinga, the instructor of the U.S. Naval Academy, was trying to keep track of these little boats that the midshipmen were sailing up on Chesapeake Bay. And came up with a system that used Loran back before the GPS satellites went up, and would report the positions back via amateur radio. And it has since become this worldwide phenomenon for taking the GPS output and plugging it into ham radios. And people with more brains and more bucks than brains will put these things in their cars and trucks and, you know, nearly drive down the road. Let's see where KC2 TPD is today. And you know, he's also in Manhattan, in the theater district somewhere, driving around. But the most amazing packet radio station is at ARISS.net. AR, amateur radio, ISS, the International Space Station. RS0, ISS, is a radio Sputnik, zero, International Space Station, is the Russian call sign for the space station. And a friend of mine currently in Florida, who used to live in Houston, worked on the packet radio system when he was in Houston. 75DID Blue. He's a big guy in the AMSAT community, Amateur Satellite Organization. These are stations that have transmitted packets via the International Space Station, with their hand call signs and their locations showing. Let's see. Last heard 9 hours, 40 minutes, and 12 seconds ago in the case of WA6 LIE-3. Six land, he's probably out in California. N6 UPG here. Southeast of Lancaster, California. Lancaster being not that far from Edwards Air Force Base. I remember because Lancaster had to check in for press credentials for the STS-1 landing out of Edwards Air Force Base. Many years ago. I'm a space cadet. That's why I live in Florida, kind of waiting for my ride home, as it were. But this is the fun part of GPS, keeping track of things, transmitting your position, keeping track via amateur radio. And because there's ham radio on satellite that I can play with, that's really one of the reasons I got my ham radio license. There is a hand exam coming up Sunday morning here at the conference. If you spend maybe half an hour looking over the book, please do try and pass the exam. It's really worthwhile, much fun. You meet a whole lot of technically oriented people, a lot of whom you'll not have to explain yourself to. And it's a pretty interesting hobby. A lot of fun, and give you lots of interesting things. Not so much fun things, but interesting things. For example, I spent a week in Homestead, Florida, following Hurricane Andrew, not 2 years ago. It was quite an adventure. And, I mean, you get to do things, go places that probably just doesn't know what's out there. And why would you want to? But it's technically interesting. So, some of us sort of think that's fun. Let's see, getting back to topic. For those of you who have your mobile phones with web browsers in them, if you go to h.ph2.mobi, I've got the schedule for the conference in there. You can just use your telephone dial for 1, 2, or 3 for Friday, Saturday, or Sunday schedules. You can maneuver to the time of day you're interested in. If you want to know it's not at 2 o'clock, it'll jump you there. And if you want to know what electronic kickback is, click on that particular page and give you information. Ah, that little sound was one of the satellites just coming above the horizon in the Orbitron software. I will have a link where you can download this Orbitron software for free on my GPS page. I forgot to put that on, so I'll make sure you can do that. CheshireCatalyst.com/GPS. Jump on back to that. My schedule for the Hope Conference can be found at thenexthope.mobi, M-O-B-I, but that can be a little thumb intensive. It can also be found at h.ph2.mobi. The PH2 is for phone friendly, which has PHs on both words. That's the PH2 part. And that's a website I operate where I'm trying to make websites that are friendly for mobile phone web browsers. These apps for specific operating systems like iPhone and Android are wonderful if you have an iPhone or if you have an Android. But since most people these days have a web browser on your phone, I'm creating web pages for the rest of us. My whole concept is making information available, and has been since I helped publish the TAP newsletter back in the 70s and 80s. Beginning of my kind of thing. So that's pretty much it on the satellites themselves. Now you'll notice the way the antennas are arranged. The antennas in the center are beaming pretty much straight down, and the ones around the edges, well, you're trying to hit the atmosphere at an angle, and that can be a little bit of a problem. If you look at one of our birds here, let's try this one. The green line represents the horizon as seen from that satellite. So it covers about half the Earth. Right now it's going to be at an elevation of 62.7 degrees for us. So that's going to be a pretty straight shot down from the satellite. These satellites are about 12,000 miles up. This is called a medium Earth orbit. And it takes about 12 hours to orbit the globe at this altitude. And as you can see, it goes pretty far around. You'll notice that the orbit practically carries in an almost straight line down the lines of longitude. And then they have to swim around here to come back up a line of longitude. There are six orbits. And each of the six orbits has four satellites in that orbital track. So that coming up with the EFMERIS, the actual cable of where the satellites are, becomes easier for the devices. There will never be more than 31 satellites turned on as operational at any given time. There can be 32. But I was reading an interesting article in GPS World magazine a while back that was saying they have a problem when they want to test something on the ground. So they only have 31 operational satellites working in space at any given time, so they can save that last PRN, that pseudorandom noise number, for the one they're testing on the ground. Let's see. Good question. I think there's about 36 up. A number of them have been turned off completely. You generally need 24 in a constellation to be completely operational for 24-hour-a-day operation. 30. The GPS system is a U.S. System operated by the Department of Defense for military purposes. Civilian frequencies are available for your little handheld GPS receiver and for anyone to receive. Some of our friends, not our friends, have decided that they don't want to be at the mercy of the United States for what is becoming a very important resource. The Europeans are starting to build out the Galileo system, so they will have their own satellites and do not have to rely on the American system. The Russians, of course, have had the GLONASS system for many decades, and they're starting to realize that they have to replace some of their older satellites now as well. The Chinese are all setting up a system called COMPASS, because they don't want to be... They don't want to be at the mercy of the Russians or the Americans. And they, you know, want to have their own. It's going to be a really big thing. The primary thing that GPS is providing is PNT, positioning, navigation, and timing. The timing things, when you're talking about subject communications networks, your switches have to talk to each other, and the timing becomes critical. And so things like these GPS satellites, each GPS satellite has on board an atomic clock, which is very accurate. It's a whole another level of topic to talk about the clocks. But they are up there. They're keeping very good track of time. And they help the machines on the ground talk to each other and help each one establish the timing on the ground. You'll notice on even Star Trek The Next Generation, I caught them coming out of orbit one time, or coming out of warp, and Picard told the navigator to sync up with the nearest satellite for timing. Once again, in the Star Trek science, you know, somebody was on board. And it's pretty cool. At this point, you know, when it comes to what happens after you receive the data, I'm not really the expert. I can give you more information about the Delta rockets and take this stuff up, because I can go to my spacelaunchinfo.com. Let's see now. We've got an Atlas rocket going up next, so let me go out to my complete schedule. And let's see where some deltas out here. Here's a Delta IV Heavy going up to the National Reconnaissance Office. Now, there's information on the deltas. I mean, I'm such a geek, I have a delta rocket on my delta. Interesting thing, since the National Reconnaissance Office does have a public website, I'll link you right there. There are some days when doing this stuff up is just too much fun. Another thing, too, because I've got the interest in the mobile web browser, m.spacelaunchinfo.com will bring you to a mobile enhanced website where, again, you can just take the menu choices, press them on your telephone dial, and it will bring you out of things. The launch viewing mobile FAQ page, and I frequently ask questions about how to view a space launch. And this has been set up, the page is one long page, the main page. The mobile version breaks out each question into its own page to fit the memory requirements in mobile phones. So come back here and go to Space Launch Viewing FAQ page. You'll see one very long page. There's the next shuttle mission coming up, STS-133 in November. The next flights. You'll see STS-133, 134, and 335. That's going to be the rescue mission. I understand that the Senate has approved plans for a flight after 134. That's a whole other topic. We don't need to go there now. This is the list of upcoming launches, mostly unmanned, but I've got the manned launches in here for helping with the schedule. Spaceflight Now is an interesting site. It's the one I use to research launch dates, because NASA doesn't update their pages as often. More questions? If you're coming to Florida to see a shuttle launch, there's only two scheduled, possibly three scheduled, working on that. Spaceview Park in Titusville, Florida is where you'll usually find me for a shuttle launch. This is the view as seen from an WB-58 weather reconnaissance plane. You'll notice the spacecraft taking off here. So there are better places in Spaceview Park to view a shuttle launch, but can you really get there? And this is all information on how to find our way to the park. Keep in mind, it's the world's longest tailgate party for the world's first game. You can see it for about 4 minutes during the day, on a good no clouds day. At night, if it's a night launch, if you really keep track of it, you can track for 7 minutes as it starts heading over the horizon, and it's 8 minutes for me to main engine cut off. So you get to see a really good long time from there. This is the Mercury 7 monument at Spaceview Park, put up by the Spacewalk of Fame Foundation, a group of former Space Center workers and other space cadets, I mean the other space cadets. and I help making the decisions. So for more on the topic of GPS and where things go from there, I'm going to ask for the lights to come up a little bit. And because our audience here, I'm sure, knows much more than I on the topic of what happens to data after it's received. We do have microphones set up for audience participation. So if somebody has more information they'd like to share on what happens to GPS information afterwards, that's going to come to the microphone.
I've heard mention of flexing GPS in war areas, in areas with military.
If you're driving through a city with military base, do not be surprised if your GPS receiver shows you off the interstate by half a mile or so. They will have track motors called pseudo-lights, not satellites, but pseudo-lights, that will try and throw off your GPS receiver so that you can't take accurate bearings to launch your own missile into the military base. Yeah, that's been fairly going on for a while, but they don't really publicize it, but just don't be surprised. Okay, one thing I would like to mention while I have some attention. RTGs, radio isotope thermoelectric generators. NASA will be setting up the Mars Science Laboratory next year, and it will have an RTG, the radio isotope thermal generator. All these things are little chunks of plutonium encased in a ceramic shell, stacked together so that the heat that these things naturally generate produce electricity. If there is an explosion on the launch pad, it's designed to not break up. We all know about design in the real world. If it does break up, these encased plutonium objects cannot break out of the ceramic shell, and therefore the people who will be in the big suits will go out and collect these things and pick them up and take them back out to the radiation labs and put another RTG back together again. The thing is that being a ham operator in Brevard County, I've attended the lectures on these RTGs, how safe they are. We had one of the radiation directors of the Department of Energy come down. She said she was bringing her kids to the launch of the Cassini, which also had an RTG. That's how safe she knew this launch would be, at least from the nuclear standpoint. And this is not an atomic pile we're sending up. The nuclear crazies just go, oh, it's a nuke! And they will protest. You're going to hear about the protests. I can guarantee you that for certain. But simply be aware, the information is all out here. There's lots of peer-reviewed information on this stuff. They have tested this stuff practically to destruction. They know how good these ceramic shells are around plutonium. And the plutonium cannot kill you unless you breathe in the dust. That's what the ceramic encapsulation is designed to do, is to make sure there is no plutonium dust. So, just when you hear about this stuff next year, remember there was this tall, bearded, weirdo hippie computer freak that told you, it's all right. He's going to be out there with his ham radio watching for this stuff and helping to direct traffic if there's a problem, because that's what we have to do on launch day. We're just out there among the crowd, being eyes and ears for the Brevard County Emergency Management people, and we're usually out there watching launch ourselves, so, you know, forced against our will to watch a rocket launch. Oh, yeah. Too much fun. But I will leave this link into RTGs on my GPS page. Let's see, I need to remind myself, include the Orbitron software link. And any other questions I can offer?
Yeah, you spoke about the Russian system and the U.S. system that are both up right now, the other systems that are being planned. Is there, I know know that out there, there are survey receivers that use both.
Right.
You're maintaining really high accuracy. Are there any other ones or ones that are available that work off of both systems that you're aware of?
The RGK, the real-time kinetic survey receivers, usually they will take them out to a survey point, sit them down for 2 hours, so they have a lot of data to collect. They then take a reference station, a known survey point, and then watch the accuracy of the signals coming in. They will then later go back, merge that data, so that they know where the one in the field was, and can figure out to within a few centimeters, the proper position for mapping, for civil engineering, and for all that stuff. The other systems, again, the satellites are simply sending down the same types of information, maybe slightly different frequencies, slightly different codes, but they all have to be published codes. It's going to be useful for the public to use in their handheld receivers. And if you don't get it useful with handheld receivers, your budget requirement for the space segment becomes a whole lot harder to establish before your legislature, be it the American, the European legislature, or the Russian.
But not the Chinese.
Well, the Chinese, they're just going to do what they're going to do. But again, if they want to sell devices that use their satellite, they have to publish the codes, publish the frequencies, and have all the information available.
Morning. Morning. I heard that the American supply of plutonium that is generated is extremely low.
Yes, it is.
What are we going to do about getting more plutonium to power these sources?
Good question. I don't know. I would speculate that we should probably try getting better relations with the French, who use dirtier power generation nuclear facilities than we use these days, and we may be able to buy some supplies from them. That's mere personal speculation, and I honestly don't know myself. Yes, sir.
Super presentation. I love the way you use the web rather than PowerPoint. That's fantastic.
Thank you.
If you're a whistleblower or if you're in intellectual property negotiations, you may not want people to know where you're traveling to. And you can take your cell phone out of your, you can take the battery out of your cell phone or leave it at home, but there are devices that can be placed in your car surreptitiously to track your movement. And I understand that they only ping intermittently, so they can be very, very hard to locate when they're in your car. And so, again, if you're a whistleblower, you don't want whoever you're going to whistle on to know where you are. Is there any way you can find those or detect them? Or so, even if you use a rental car, it can be awkward. So for people that are perhaps being stalked,
try the mirror on the stick the way the customs people, you know, have them at the borders. And, there you go. No, look for an outer box of the magnet.
They can be purchased on the internet fairly inexpensively, these systems where you can track people. And so that's, for whistleblowers, it's an issue.
Mm-hmm.
But no thoughts about it.
I haven't put any thought to them. Excuse me, can you mute the microphone, please?
In most situations, the time window for that these people will be able to install these on your car or something like that for the car is going to be limited. So it's going to be, if you look under your car, it's going to be, and you know what the underside of your car is like, it's going to be pointless. So start looking at the underside of your car and then look at
that way, when you see something you don't recognize somewhere.
So they're really good there to try and find it.
I'm just going to ask a question about the US GPS satellite system. I had read through various magazines at least a year ago now that there were discussions about the future GPS in the US being out. They talked about GPS 2.0 system that the government was starting to back. At the time, I was unfamiliar with how the technology works, and now that I'm actually having it up again, so if you speak to me about it.
Well, they're always working on newer satellites. Let me see. Okay, Navistar 2F2 is the next one going up. Let's see, this is the Air Force fact sheet on global positioning system. Let's see. Copy. paste, I'll put this link on the talk page as well. But they are upgrading the satellites, and your current receiver will still work. Newer receivers will have more features based on the new stuff going into the satellites. But most of what's going into the satellites is for the military, the precise measurement service, which is heavily encrypted and encoded so that people who don't like it very much can't be that precise. Oh yes, yeah. It's simply so that the receivers will receive data better and know where they are. Remember, these satellites simply transmit information. They do not receive any information from your handheld receiver. And the whole idea behind the talk is it's not the satellites that know where you are. It's your device that knows where you are, and it's what you do with that information, or what your device does with that information afterwards. And I really don't have that much expertise in that area.
I understand that the satellites have very sensitive atomic clocks. I'm wondering if you have any information as to what back-end systems or information is updating those clocks due to time dilation from the reduced gravity in space.
If you go to ngis.gov, they should have more information on that because it's NGIS that built the atomic clocks for the satellites. Naval Research Office probably has some as well. And if you go to, usno.navy.mil, USNO being the U.S. Naval Observatory, which is the Navy's timekeeper. Let's try that with W's in front of it. Some of the webmasters out there in the government universe are concerned about that sort of thing. Yeah, this is a tough book. It's heavy as a rock and slow as a rock, but I find that slow is better than dead stuff. And I need something rugged enough to survive. So, yes, out at USNO. Let's try old Chicken and Talk. Chicken and Talk are two servers used for their network time protocol. Time. There we go. That's a tab for time. The USNO Master Clock, GPS. So there's going to be a link for Navy and military GPS constellation information, GPS data and information files. All this information is out there. So let me Control-C to copy, Control-V to paste, and those are using a very sophisticated piece of software here called Notepad. It is my primary software for writing my web pages as well. John, good morning.
I have two questions. First question was the International Space Station and the hand radio operators, even if you were to send call signs, so were they actually passing private verbally, or were they actually like backing as part of a repeater?
Okay, most of the astronauts do have a ham radio license, and on very rare occasions it's become very useful when the communications link through the TETRA system, the Tracking Data Relay satellite, has gone out, and they've actually used the ham radio to communicate from that to the ground. It's gone out, let's go reboot it. And they don't always talk on the air. Every once in a while, some hams, John Blaha was a really good guy on the ham radio. I would listen on my handheld on his passes. He would talk to the ground. It's wonderful to hear them. But not that many of the guys use that as their primary recreation.
Yeah, we probably mostly use the emergency.
Yeah. There's a packet radio repeater called the Digipeater on board. So the guys on the ground can send data up through the satellite. That ARISS.net page that I showed you earlier was where hands on the ground had sent APRS formatted packets with the Entropec recording system. That's why it showed maps of where these guys were. It's 1200 baud, 1.2K, and you know your phone modems these days are 56K.
Yeah.
So 1.2K is really slow. But packet radio is not the information super highway. I consider the information super bicycle path. And boy, can you go off-road.
My other question relates to relative relativistic effects, time dilation in regard to accuracy, because as I recall, these satellites have very accurate timers on them.
Very
and the relativistic effects are causing some kind of accuracy issues.
I'm sure there are. I would refer you to these pages at NIST, NIST.gov, or at the USNO, U.S. Naval Observatory, where these guys are really more up on the time dilation than I am. These topics lead off into so many different areas. Becoming an expert in all of them is a real problem. But the information is out there. And just dig around, you'll find some links.
Yeah, you were looking for something earlier on the AIS. You go to shipfinder.com.
You
can get plots of all ships around the world. In terms of the relative effects for GPS satellites, there are papers out describing the most recent satellites, the QRs, and the time dilation effect underground or something. Because so when they made the plots more accurate, new relative effects in general, the effects take hold.
Very good, thank you.
This is a 48-page document all about the effects of...
Could you come to the microphone, please, sir? I think Queen Elizabeth is no longer afloat, but we'll try its call sign. I also know that I'm using flash blocker on my Firefox.
There is a 48-page document describing the effects of special and general relativity in the clocks. The clocks on the satellites have cesium and rubidium clocks. They keep precision of about 1 second in 300 years. I will be giving a talk on GPS on the moment that kind of clocks. So I will talk about such clocks.
Very good, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, so which is the name of the ship? Okay, it looks like it's off the coast of France just now. Okay. Any questions? All right. I'm going to close it up then. Thank you.